breaking out of ADHD relationship dysfunction. After not breaking a fall? That sounds all kinds of painful, right? Well, it was, but not as painful as remaining on a rickety roller coaster. Hello, I'm Gina Pera, author of two groundbreaking books on adult ADHD and the first website of any kind on adult ADHD, ADHD Roller Coaster. This podcast is from a post, a popular post on that blog. I'm going to tell you my personal ADHD dysfunctional roller coaster story, well, at least a small slice of it, in a minute, but first, some background. Let's consider how ADHD relationship dysfunction typically develops and becomes entrenched. You're both several years into a relationship before discovering that one or both of you have ADHD. By that time, you both have developed misinterpretations of the other's behavior and, in response, counterproductive coping responses. This is on top of the lifelong pileup of poor coping responses for the adult with ADHD that took place in the years prior to this relationship. Once there's a diagnosis and maybe medication on board, okay, that's a start, but it can still take a conscious and informed effort to overcome these entrenched patterns and emotional responses. Moreover, how do you distinguish ADHD symptoms, which should generally respond to medication, from these entrenched poor coping responses? I've tackled this topic for years in my writing and in my presentations to the public and clinicians from San Francisco to Turkey, and now in my online training. Because this issue alone is one that ensnares plenty of adults with ADHD and their loved ones and doesn't let go. A centerpiece of our adult ADHD-focused couple therapy model is the dysfunctional interaction cycle. It can play out every day in endless ways in ADHD challenge relationships, but also for solo adults, relationship with themselves and their ADHD. When we've careened around the ADHD roller coaster long enough, we tend to develop a boatload of these poor coping responses. The trick is identifying them as such and revising them. Things began in the early 2000s with my husband only a few years into diagnosis and still with a mediocre approach to medication. Did I know that at the time? No. It began with me asking myself this question about my husband. Could I depend on him? To be specific, one particularly negative pattern involved my fear that my husband would be incapable, dare I say it, even disinterested, in caring for me should I become sick or disabled, even temporarily. I wasn't planning on it, of course, but I'm a realist and I know things can happen. I'm not alone. This is a recurring fear in my online group for partners of adults with ADHD. And this fear has a basis in reality. ADHD challenges can thwart one's best intentions in many areas of life. This is just one of them. But this was a new experience for me. I'm so fortunate to have grown up in a caring family, and all my life have had caring friends, including boyfriends. So what was up with this? Moreover, I was happily single for many years, deciding to bite the bullet and get married only at age 40 when my new husband moved to the Bay Area for a job. So I was accustomed to taking care of myself. Still, in fact, there was an incident in the early days, one where I found myself injured, stranded, and heartbroken. Was he incapable of being attentive and caring, or unwilling? Did he just not care? And at what point does it no longer matter which it is? I should clarify, he could be caring and attentive when the need was clear-cut and when he was not deep in some scientific database for his work. But caring and attentive on demand and over a sustained period, that was another kettle of fish. Over our years together, I had plenty of, quote, evidence to support this not so irrational belief of mine. That is that I'd be on my own if I were ever to become sick or incapacitated. He might mean to be attentive, but, you know, distraction, disorganization, and let's not forget boredom. Early in our marriage, for example, I had foot surgery. The physician issued strict orders to keep my foot elevated and move as little as possible. My husband, who worked at home then, swore he would be a regular Nurse Nightingale, the 6'2", 230-pound version, and his tenure started post-surgery. He steered my wheelchair careening through the hospital hallways and into the elevator, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride style. A little bit fun, okay, but I was holding on for dear life, praying he didn't knock my foot into the elevator doorframe or catapult me out of the chair entirely. Am I exaggerating a bit? I don't know. Maybe. I was heavily drugged at that point. Once home, I saw that he had dutifully set up my bedstead with a landline phone and his extra cell phone. That way, I could be sure of reaching him upstairs in his office on the other side of the house, should I need him. Great start. When I needed help getting to the bathroom, however, I found the landline phone had a dead battery. The pay-as-you-go cell phone had no more go. I lay there marooned for too many hours, him out of shouting distance. He didn't think to come to check on me either. Once he gets absorbed in his work, he tends to stay there. I should say that also, this was in the very early days of treatment for him, and over time I came to appreciate how long it took him to get the focus he needs to do his work. And once he's there, he's very reluctant to come back and spend all that time again seeing what I might need and then spend more time getting back to the focus. So I understand this now. Didn't understand it so much then. As a result, I felt helpless, hurt, and duped. I'd left all my friends behind in San Diego. My family lived far away. I was on my own. So-called ADHD relationship dysfunction patterns might have been clear to me if we'd known about ADHD earlier, or when we did discover it, what it truly meant. I'd figured out enough by 1998, 4 years into our relationship, to organize an evaluation. He was diagnosed and given medication, but back then I was naive enough to believe that I could leave treatment up to my husband, PhD molecular biologist, and the MD psychiatrist, or as I came to view them, dumb and dumber. Please understand, that's not casting aspersions on physicians or psychiatrists. I know many good ones. It merely reflects what I have come to see after knowing thousands of firsthand stories, the poor, even lackadaisical standard of care when it comes to adult ADHD. There are always standouts, of course, but the average from my vantage point seems very poor indeed. Doing my part to correct this, to empower mental health care consumers has been a major part of my work and volunteer activity for almost 25 years. Meanwhile, back at the bedstead, I sat there waiting for my husband to remember that I exist and that I was hobbled, and that if he didn't hear from me for this long, I think it was like 7 hours at that point, maybe something was wrong. I made a mental note to my subconscious as I sat there, lay there. Be very careful in trusting him again with your welfare. No matter how much he professes that you can trust him. This was also new to me in personal relationships, feeling unable to trust that words would be backed up with actions, no matter how sincere the intentions. For me to doubt this felt uncomfortable, almost duplicitous, but there it was. I also made a mental note to ask myself, why do you remain married? Good question, but it was complicated. And being in pain and hobbled was no time to really think about that seriously. Now remember, this was the early days in adult ADHD awareness. We were on the bleeding edge. There were no books to guide us, especially none on ADHD relationship issues, for Pete's sake. My first book was Is It You, Me, or Adult ADD, was only the third consumer book available on Amazon about adult ADHD. There might have been a few professional guides, but guess what? Amazon was not really a thing, or it was just starting to be a thing, and it didn't have quite the choice, such as professional guides. I don't know how I would have found those. It would have taken some effort. So my book pioneered the importance of acknowledging the potential impact of ADHD on both partners and emphasizing the importance of teamwork with evidence-based treatment strategies. But again, there we were, dealing with ADHD in the late 1990s. Adult ADHD was made an official diagnosis only in 1994. Many professionals had not yet gotten the memo. Honestly, almost 30 years later, despite great advances in research and clinical guidance, I mean, some very impressive research and impressive scientists and clinical experts, the average person with ADHD and their loved ones seldom enjoy the benefits of these advances, especially with COVID, which pushed seemingly millions to finally quit stalling and get that diagnosis and treatment. And the pace it now far exceeds supply. But back to then. Our attempts at couple therapy were so disastrous, they motivated us to double down on cooperation. Anything to avoid facing that misery again. Besides, we were paying good money to, by turns, entertain and horrify the therapist. My memory of their faces always features wide eyes and dropped jaws. I remember one looking at my husband and said, "You didn't do the homework?" And he was like, "No." And made no apologies. Oh, yeah, it was horrifying. But I was also horrified at what was passing for treatment with therapy and medications. So I started a local online discussion group, a Yahoo group, if you remember that, called ADHD Partner. I wanted to compare notes with others and see, was it all this bad? The short answer, mostly yes, it was. That local group quickly became international. We were all feeling our way. Since then, about 10,000 people have been through the group. Gradually, my own ADHD relationship dysfunction improved, but it was often one step forward, three steps back. Steps back, and you know, remember, I'm figuring a lot of this stuff out on my own. And I never knew when things would shift and I'd feel dropped on my head, metaphorically speaking. It hardly helped that we were at the epicenter of the dot-com boom, Silicon Valley. Everything was buzzing, still is. We started turning the corner in the "can I rely on him" question with the incident I will call Nurse Nightingale with ice cream and barbiturates. A few years after the foot surgery incident, I had another outpatient surgery. The only two surgeries of my life, by the way. Dr. Goat, my husband's nickname, accompanied me to the appointment. As we left, I was still groggy. The doctor gave the printed instructions to my husband. Once home, I staggered to the bed and fell asleep. A few hours later, I awakened to Nurse Nightingale plying me with two Vicodin pills and a bowl of French vanilla ice cream. "Dutifully," he said, "the doctor said to give you this every 2 to 4 hours. The ice cream will prevent nausea." Like clockwork, he showed up with the pills and the ice cream every 4 hours. Or was it two? I don't know. I was in a semi-stupor. Finally, I said, "Stop. You'll turn me into a modern-day Marilyn Monroe." So, for context, that was about 5 years after the foot surgery incident. Fortunately, all this meant I could positively update my fear scenario about being unable to rely on him in an emergency. But I had not completely forgotten. Survival instincts remained strong. A few years later came an unexpected big drop on the roller coaster. They always happen when you least expect it, right? When you think things are going so much better. Well, here's what happened that morning as I was going about my way, putting clothes in the washer. Instead, I took a protracted, extremely ungraceful, and rather painful fall in the garage. What happened was that my bathrobe caught on a bicycle pedal stuck out in my path. I tried to avoid dripping over an air purifier. In the process, I ricocheted myself in several directions and on several hard surfaces before finally landing with a hard bump on the raised kitchen doorstep. I should say halfway onto it. The hard part. It sounded like this. My husband was working at home again after years of working in an office. He was right upstairs, or at least I thought. We could clearly talk to each other through his office floor, the garage ceiling. Surely he heard the cacophony of me banging around. If not, then surely he couldn't miss my whimpering and calling out to him. Something like this, though not quite as energetic. Lying there in a crumpled heap, my mind ran through all the likely scenarios. He had heard the calamity, but figured, she's okay, she's the self-sufficient type. Or worse, he heard it and didn't want to interrupt his work. Granted, as I said, his work requires deep concentration, and it was not easy at that time for him to transition in and out of it. It's a lot easier now. But, heck, I might have actually broken something and needed medical care. I didn't want to start moving around. I finally struggled to my feet and limped Quasimodo style back to my office, calling out as I went. I held out hope that he might actually be elsewhere in the house, out of earshot, and after my fall. Then I discovered he was in the bathroom. On the other side of the house. Phew, that explains it. Goat, I called. What's happening? He said. I just had a bad fall. Through the closed door, I heard it. His profound annoyance at being interrupted from whatever he was doing. A sigh, something like this. There it was, lurking beneath the surface this entire time. I thought things had improved. My worst fear triggered. He was annoyed that something bad had happened to me that required his help. This was a horrifying feeling. What are you thinking about now? Are you starting to think that I might have been in denial of abusive behavior and whatnot? I get it. But hang on a minute. As I've learned, life isn't always so black and white. So we hear it a lot these days, not so much when I was starting out, that our ADHD partners might not be able to show it, but they love us deep down. I don't know how anyone can make such generalizations about an estimated 10 to 30 million people in the U.S. alone. Obviously, the symptoms can get in the way, gets in the way of a lot of things. But if he was caring deep down, though, exactly how far down? Again, I wasn't alone in encountering this scenario. Over years of leading the ADHD partner group, I've heard it too many times. An ADHD partner who seems to view their partner's temporary illness or injury, their need, not with compassion, but as an inconvenience. We can understand it, how a person with ADHD might already be at the end of their rope pretty much every day, just trying to cope to get through the day. But from the other side, I gotta say, among the many potential ADHD relationship challenges, this has to be one of the most hurtful. And as I said, it's not universal. So certainly, I can explain the range of alternate explanations. Let me be clear. For example, how ADHD neurobiology can interfere with even the most compassionate person's ability to organize appropriate responses. Or the fact that ADHD means you might respond impulsively to your first thought, that is, inconvenience. We all might do that in our head, but then we don't say it to the other person, or we don't betray that. But some people with ADHD are stuck with that initial, whatever they're thinking comes right out. But often other thoughts come to replace that. ADHD relationship dysfunction presents only one of the many sets of challenges that adults with ADHD might face every day. It's not like ADHD relationships are an ADHD free zone, but we cannot ignore the fact when you come up against such from your intimate partner, it's a bit alarming. Your first response, depending on your level of confidence, depending on your experience of close relationships in your life, might be denial. You don't want to believe that the person you fell in love with and are so devoted to, maybe, can be truly that cold, callous, or selfish. You've heard that ADHD treatment can improve functioning, so you hold out hope, sometimes against all evidence. Again, you might tell yourself or be told, my partner cares about me deep down. The fact is, some intimate partners and others absolutely can be that cold, callous, and selfish, ADHD or not. If that's the case, we better face it and look beyond the facade, right? Humans come with variable capacities, especially when it comes to higher order brain functions such as empathy and conscience. There's nothing monolithic about ADHD. Which brings us to the gray area of ADHD relationship dysfunction. How do we know then if it's ADHD creating this undesirable response or something else? I wish I could give you clear-cut answers that would exactly apply in your case, but I can't. It's for each of us to learn as much as we can, to assess, and to make the call. Please remember that people with ADHD are not clones. And don't assume that with love and caring and medication, a true sociopath can change. The difficult truth is this. Sometimes you don't know for sure what you're dealing with until medical treatment for ADHD is well on its way. And dare I say, optimized. Because yes, ADHD medication often improves empathic functioning, not to mention putting empathic feelings into actions. To learn more, you can read or listen to the podcast based on the post ADHD Empathy and Dopamine. So my best unsolicited advice here, educate yourself on adult ADHD from solid, honest sources and be realistic in getting to know your partner. Also, be ready to tread the gray area. Again, there's only one thing that the 10 to 30 million adults with ADHD in the US alone have in common. That is variable aspects of this highly variable syndrome, with all the rest of personality and background to consider. Yes, it's easy to toss around cookie cutter platitudes about people with ADHD, but who do they help exactly? I'm not so sure. So I want to be clear. With someone other than my husband, my story might have turned out very differently. In that case, the best decision for me might have been to get out of there here. In short, relationship dysfunction seems to fall roughly into two categories. First, there's the "we can work on this" relationship dysfunction. Then there is the impossibly toxic, destructive, and irreparable relationship dysfunction. As you learn more about ADHD, especially the emotional baggage of late diagnosis, you become better equipped to start cutting through the fog and see the difference. I'll get to our latest incident on this topic in a minute, but first, I want to urge caution when it comes to what we might call professional gaslighting. I don't mean professional gaslighters. I mean professionals, such as mental health professionals, therapists, and others, who dismiss the perspectives and experience of the partners of adults with ADHD. It's not always intentional, but I've seen that many adult ADHD specialists act very protectively toward their clients. I understand this because I feel the same way towards the folks in my local adult ADHD group and always have. Unfortunately, though, this often means that these specialists extend little compassion or understanding to the partners. In fact, some specialists view the partners or spouses more as annoyances, perhaps even the core of their adult ADHD clients' problems, more than ADHD itself. And granted, that might sometimes be the case. As I tell people with ADHD who ask about that, I say all you can do is maximize your own ADHD treatment so you start getting more clear on where the dysfunction is. But these specialists often want the partners to get with the program and throw all their support enthusiastically behind their ADHD partners. Now, it goes against all reason, against all of what these specialists should know about ADHD, but it's there, trust me. I sometimes get that reaction by proxy, simply by talking, writing, or speaking about it. Now, this does not typically come from the most prominent adult ADHD experts. I've mostly earned their respect, but more the lower and mid-level specialists and some bloggers. Bottom line, some of these ADHD specialists routinely gaslight the partners of adults with ADHD. "You must be more compassionate and not take things personally," they might say. "You must understand what your ADHD partner is struggling with." No matter if that's how the partners of started 20 years, started the relationship years ago, understanding and compensating, and they are exhausted now, and they just want someone to understand that ADHD affects them too. Today, after 3 decades together, I'm clear that there is a deep down kindness to my husband, and it doesn't require heavy equipment operation. Too often in the past, poorly managed ADHD obscured or sabotaged his innate empathy. He'd fail my expectations and his own. And here's the tricky part. Instead of reacting with contrition and apologizing, he'd react with anger. Later, he would say, the anger was directed at himself, as in, "I failed again." But I was caught in the crossfire of this internal conversation I didn't even know was happening. So, as I said, happily things are different now. That morning, as I limped to the back of the house, seeking solace and perhaps a medical examination, I decided to momentarily ignore my husband's put-upon-sounding sigh. I put aside all the old painful patterns from when we didn't know what was happening and treatment was not helping and sometimes made things worse. All those old patterns that supercharge this dysfunctional pattern. Instead, I drew upon the more recent memory with Nurse Nightingale and the uber reliable Vicodin ice cream routine, not to mention other smaller examples that had happened in the interim. With that memory in mind, I mentally stepped back and I gave him 30 seconds or so to transition. Not to mention, as it turns out, finish whatever he was doing in the bathroom. Something like this. I flopped on the bed and said, "Hey, I fell and I might have broken something." At that point, he hepped too, speedily fetching an assortment of cold packs, sitting with me on the bed, asking where it hurts, petting my head, kissing my banged up wrist, and saying, "Poor you." This was a much better outcome than we both might have experienced in years past, to put it mildly. To wit, I'd react with hurt and anger to his imposed upon sighing, accuse him of being the most selfish man I have ever known, side note, and I was stupid enough to marry you, and storm out of the room, cortisol pumping, feeling horrible about my marriage and plotting my escape. He'd react by withdrawing to the safe confines of his bunker, aka his home office, plumbing the depths of scientific databases, which don't require a lot of feelings, feeling stunned himself that he screwed up again, that his intent was so badly translated into actions, and finally, after an hour or so, in perhaps a subconscious effort at ego protection after the memory was less vivid, what the hell's wrong with her anyway? Will this strategy help your relationship? I mean, the strategy of learning to identify the dysfunctional patterns and revising them into more functional ones. Will stepping back and allowing for your ADHD partner, now on board with treatment strategies, perhaps, to have a moment's transition, will that help to heal past hurtful patterns? Will you be able to build enough new positive patterns, enabling you to safely let go of the old ones? I can't promise, but might be worth a try. There's a postscript to this story. The next morning, I went to load the clothes in the washer. What did I find? An absolutely clear and wide path, free of bicycle, humidifier, and other flotsam and jetsam, without me even having to ask. Thank you, Dr. Goat. We hope our story helps you. We have always believed in sharing our story and our lessons hard won so that you can enjoy a happier ride to get over your learning curve faster on your own ADHD roller coaster. To help heal your ADHD relationship dysfunction, whether it's with a partner or another loved one or within yourself, you might find other resources I have helpful. I'll include some links in this episode's description. I'm really excited about my online training program. I launched it in, I think, late 2021, and it's really doing what I always hoped it would do. And that is, it's really helping to move the needle quickly for individuals and couples. It's called Solving Your Adult ADHD Puzzle. So thank you for listening to this long, but I hope important story. I'd love to hear your experiences in your relationships with this phenomenon. Just leave a comment on this post at the ADHD Roller Coaster. And if you like this podcast, please leave a rating or share with a friend. Thanks.